This episode is brought to you by Bento Box, helping restaurants bring hospitality online. Learn more at getbento.com/opening soon. That's getbento.com/opening soon.
Hi, this is Jenny Goodman.
And I'm Alex McCreary.
And we are the hosts of Opening Soon on Heritage Radio Network. We listen to HRN and are actually guests on several shows before bringing our own show to this network. And it's been so amazing to see and hear the unparalleled content that comes from our community, even with limited financial resources. HRN's been making food radio for 10 years. HRN staff and hosts make it look really easy, but making the best food radio out there is actually really hard work.
We're super excited to be a part of Heritage Radio Network, and we invite you to join us in making sure that in our second decade, HRN is stronger than ever. So become a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate right now. You can even show your support by selecting Opening Soon in the designation drop-down menu. Thanks for listening to HRN.
Heritage Radio Network. We are your hosts. I'm Jenny Goodman.
And I'm Alex McCreary.
And if you're just joining us for our first season, Opening Soon is a show all about the business of opening restaurants. We are talking to some of the world's greatest chefs and restaurateurs and vendors and the people who help take your idea to Opening Soon.
If you've listened to one of our podcasts before, you'll know that Jenny and I are not amazing restaurateurs. We're actually pretty bad ones. But in our new company, or our company that's now 6 years old, Tillit NYC, we've been fortunate to work with a whole lot of restaurant startups and people that aren't restaurant startups, and kind of watch them go through their journey of opening, and really feel like they have a lot of lessons and insight that can help people out there when they're thinking about or starting on their own project. And so that's why we're here, and that's why we're asking questions from the experts that are doing it right. Today we have with us Missy Robbins, who's the chef and owner of Lilia and Missy in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Before we dive into our interview with Missy, we're going to do a quick wrap-up from last week with our interview with Morgan Tucker and Josh Morgan about sourcing. And so we have five key takeaways. And number one was to treat your vendors like your partners. And I think this kind of goes for basically everyone that you deal with within your restaurant, is, you know, to look at them as a very integral part of what you're doing and to treat them like a partner, not just as somebody that's selling you something.
Missy's nodding her head. Yes,
I am.
Yeah, it's true. And as somebody who could also be a vendor, we appreciate being treated like partners. We consider all of our restaurant partners that. The other key takeaway was focus on your strengths. So you're a chef or you're a restaurateur. You're not necessarily a kitchen designer or a builder. So you might not be amazing at logistics. So leave that to some of the experts.
Number three was to learn who will be servicing the equipment that you do buy before you buy it. So, you know, obviously equipment can break, and you know, if you're a small restaurant and you have one range, then that range goes down, you're in big trouble. So you need to know who's going to be there and who's going to be there quick, and that they're going to be good.
The next one was vet the equipment. So ask your manufacturer if you can go to one of their restaurant clients and actually check out the machines in use. And then the other key nugget here was always ask for the extended warranty, because manufacturers don't just give it to you. You have to actually ask for it. Did you ask for the extended warranty, Missy?
I'm not sure about that.
Ruh-roh.
The last one on the list is to lease items that are more prone to breakage. And Josh, in our interview, talked about ice machines as well as warewashing equipment. And I think it's sometimes it can be better when you're on your lease. And I think we were fortunate enough to get a listener comment. And I think Jenny can expand a little bit on that.
Yes, we actually had a listener email us after.
Which we love.
So please email us your questions, DM us, or any follow-up nuggets. We will post them on the blog or repeat them here on the show. But we had somebody from Insinger Machines, the president, which is also a family-run business. And they basically, they make dishwashing machines, but they said that, you know, if licensed service people should be able to manage their machines, so don't be scared. He also said, look for refurbished machines so you can save money. There's lots and lots of refurbished equipment out there, so you don't necessarily need the latest and greatest. It's a good way to save money.
Right. And we don't purport to be, you know, the final answer on all of the things that we're talking about. So it's always, you know, there's always a different side of the story, and we want you to, you know, do your research and do your homework and find what works best for you. We're just kind of trying to pass on some of the best ideas that we can. So enough with last week. We're on to this week, and we're talking about designing and building your dream restaurant. So it's all about the functional build out of your space. And so you've chosen your partners, you've got your lease, your business plan's going, everything's kind of going in place, and now it's ready for design and construction. So where do you focus? What's essential? Who are the key people that will help you? And then what can you do yourself?
So we're here today with our friend, neighbor, and superstar chef, Missy Robbins.
Hi, guys.
Hi. So happy to have you on. It's Welcome. Fun to be interviewing you.
I know. It's a little weird.
It's a little weird.
I see you every day.
I know, every day.
Alex and I have coffee together most mornings.
So it's fun to be here with headphones and microphones. But Missy is the chef owner of Missy and Lilia Restaurants in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, as Alex mentioned earlier. You probably know her for her take on simplicity and using thoughtful ingredients to highlight amazing Italian cooking. But she's also super passionate about design and personally oversaw much of the process with building Lilia and Missy, where I actually saw her going to the construction site almost every day. So I can attest to that. So welcome, Missy. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Super happy
to have you. Nice little break in my day.
I know. So tell us a little bit, you know, let's start with Lilia, I think, just since that was the first restaurant. But you know, it's funny because Agatha and Aaron from Ovenly were on a few weeks ago and they were like, get a white box, but you did not get a white box. So tell us what Lilia looked like.
I got a pretty incredible former auto body shop. And the first time I ever looked at the space, there was a car in the middle of it.
A literal car.
A literal car. And still kind of work going on there. And
the car's not
like an operational body shop when you first
looked
at it?
It was like
semi-operational?
Yeah, there had been like, yeah, sort of. Huh. It was already in progress and like we knew they were leaving and it was finished.
Yeah.
But it was still going the first time I saw it.
So they forgot the car.
If you look at Lilia's Instagram way, way back, you can see a picture of it from the very first day. Yeah.
Wow. So tell us, so how was that experience and like, you know, what was the vision and where did the...
I think like anyone who knows me knows I kind of have an aesthetic, which sort of matches the food aesthetic.
Yeah, keep it simple.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I have sort of one color palette. I like light woods. I like grays.
You like black. Missy's dressed in all black today.
I'm basically, Alex and I not only have coffee together, but we wear the same clothing. I definitely knew. So I always kind of know the general aesthetic, but when you go into a building, you kind of have to adjust your aesthetic and adjust not necessarily your aesthetic, but you have to kind of work within the parameters of what that building is. The beauty of Lilia was that it has incredible, incredible bones. There are original rafters there. There are original windows there. There are original brick there, and so it's really. Was most of the design is about how do you make the space efficient so that it functions, but how do you also celebrate those original details and not screw up the building too much, because you don't want to do too much to a building like that.
Yeah, don't fuck it up.
So I feel like I got really lucky.
Is there any fear in taking a space that has, you know, old details like that, that they will have fault to them or that they won't handle the
things
that
you're gonna do? I think you want to turn to experts to make sure you check all that stuff out. And we did refurbishing of some of that stuff. So we, you know, sanded down the rafters and, you know, part of me wanted to sand them more to make it look more polished. And now I'm really happy that I was convinced not to. The windows, we replaced every single piece of glass. But like the frame is still the same and there's leaks on occasion and there are things that come through the cracks. But I think like as you build your business and you see those problems, you work to fix them as quickly as you can, because you don't know every problem that's going to be there. Sometimes luckily possible. We haven't had anything like super, super major. They're like kind of tiny, tiny little things.
Yeah.
You know, it's harder to heat it. It's harder to cool it. It's not insulated the same as like a brand new building might be. But you just kind of work through it. And all of the benefits to me of having the charm of a space like Lilia way outweigh anything negative that you can think about.
Yeah. I mean, there's always a trade-off, right? So then it's kind of an interesting point, because then, you know, Missy is completely new construction. So it's the totally other side of the coin.
Yeah, and I think new construction is appealing in certain ways. Like, you have this clean slate. You go in there. It was literally just a blank box. It wasn't even a box yet. It was some columns and piping, and some windows might have been in place. But I think you choose different locations for different reasons. And I think, you know, for Lilia, obviously the space was so appealing, but and the location was appealing once we kind of figured out what Williamsburg was and what it meant. And
Misty had never been to Williamsburg before. She was like, I only know the West Village.
No. I had been there, but I definitely wasn't planning on opening a restaurant, and now too, and now living there. So never say never, as they say. But I think, you know, we took the Missy space because we wanted to keep building in the community, and we saw this amazing opportunity with what Two Trees was doing with the park and with the entire development site down there, and we're in the first building of that development, and that was really exciting to us. So the challenge there was saying, okay, well, this isn't like the coolest space in the world, like physical space, but it has certainly potential, and we can make it what we want to make it. And more importantly, it's where we want it to be, and it's still in Williamsburg, and it's a mile from Lilia, which was really important to us for our second place. So sometimes you make compromises on different ways, and I don't even view it as a compromise. I just view it as doing something totally different and challenging myself in a different way to design differently.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to ask you to tell us a little bit about the timeline. It's really great for our listeners that we get to hear about designing a space that was a garage, and you also had the experience of designing one that was white box. Did you feel like the timeline of doing one
I think was longer than the other? In total, they're both probably pretty similar. I was brought into the Lilia project when some of it had been in process already, so like I missed some of the initial like checking to make sure there wasn't anything toxic in there. The actual like, this is where the kitchen might go. This is I was a part of it, but some of that was in process. So I would say like in total, probably pretty similar. But I mean, I spent a solid with Missy once we signed the lease. Probably even before we signed officially the lease, but knew we were going to sign the lease.
Yeah.
I spent probably a solid 6 months in the design phase.
But I also think was interesting, just from talking to you before about designing the two restaurants, is that with Lilia, you were like less, you know, having these long meetings, but with Missy, it was like very intimately involved. And, you know, was that like a lesson learned?
It was just a different, I think, listen, designers and architects and interior designers are artists, and everyone kind of has their own process. And I think there are benefits, like Lilia was much more sort of, I think they say in sports, audibles, making calls a lot, like kind of on the spot. And that sometimes was really, was like a little difficult for me, like without sometimes seeing a drawing or a mood board.
And just a planner, if you don't know her.
I'm not a planner though. That's the thing. I'm like in between.
Yeah.
So sometimes the 5-hour design meetings for Missy were really tough for me too. I love them, and I'm very close with the designer on Missy, and I've known him for 9 years. And that process was really fun for us, but it also can be a 5-hour design meeting when that's not what you do for a living.
Right.
Can also be very tedious, because it's not all about like, ooh, I really love that color, that brick, that paint. I want the kitchen to go here. Sometimes, like we discussed yesterday, it's about, well, where do you want that plug to go?
Right.
And that's just not exciting. So
no, but
I think
it's very important.
Though. I think, yeah. I think I can land somewhere in between the two, where I sort of like some of the on the fly, like, okay, now we're in here, we see the space, let's give these finishing touches maybe. But I don't consider myself a complete planner, but I like kind of some more direction.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
So both spaces, there were designers involved, and I think you said that there were two designers even with the first space. And
for
then
Lilia, there was an architect, and then there was someone who finished with the interiors, and also built it. So that interior designer for Lilia, was also an on-site builder. All that wood that's in there, all the kind of finishing, aesthetic stuff, not like the bones of like plumbing and things like that. But anything that was built, he sort of did all that on site.
All like the custom building on
so
site.
So it's kind of interesting to have your designer and your builder do the same thing. It was an interesting process to see how he worked. And then for Missy, it was much more traditional. Our architect also did Peter Guzzi did the architecture and the designs, but it's a big space and there was nothing in it. So there's a team of engineers, a team of designers, lots of builders. I mean, I remember going to the first construction meeting where you got every contractor and subcontractor around the table, which did not happen at Missy. It was a much smaller sort of thing. And this was much more formal, and it was really intimidating. Like, I was working with Two Trees, who's developed buildings all over the city, and it was great to have them because they served as a great guide and brought on, you know, the same people that they would build a building. They were having them be used in the restaurant too. So I think that was really educational for me, and I got to really meet a lot of cool artisans, some of which were like also local in Brooklyn, and we tried to pick people who were local and doing some cool stuff as well.
How did you guys go about, I know you might not have done it with Lily necessarily, but with Missy, how did you go about finding the designers and the architects that you ended up working with? Were you interviewing people? Were they recommendations or friends? Or
I'm constantly kind of interviewing and meeting designers, and even like since we've done Missy and Lilia, I've met with people just because I'm interested, or I'll sometimes go to a restaurant and be like, who designed that? And mm-hmm. I want to meet them. And I think for me, it's just kind of part of the fun and the process. For Missy, we worked with a gentleman named Peter Guzzi of As4 Guzzi. And Peter, I've known for 9 years, I think. I had met him way back when I was at Avoce, and we were looking to do other projects and possibly remodeling Avoce, the original Avoce. And it never kind of worked out, but I remained friends with him, and he was always really, really helpful in my process of like finding a partner and looking at spaces with me and sort of kind of negating a lot of spaces that I thought were cool. He found many, many flaws with. And on this one, I remember kind of bringing him to this one and being like, okay, what do you think?
Were you scared? Were you like, is he going to shoot me down?
A little bit. And I think it was honestly the first one in like 3-4 years of kind of having him sporadically look at things with me.
But that's a great lesson. If you're able to bring your architect with you when you're looking at spaces, and just
I think it's actually really, really important. I think it's really, really important because they can see things that you just can't see. Yeah. Some of them very negative and some of them very positive. So
with financial implications involved. So
also that. Right. So you can look at a space and be like, oh, I think it's really cool. And he can come in and be like, yeah, no. Cool. I mean, I remember like looking at one really cool space with him in the West Village that Sean and I both really loved. It was a townhouse, and I saw this like multi kind of concept thing going on there. And I remember bringing him there, and he was like, no. And then, but also had the ability to go look at records of past kind of applications to do things, and found all the problems with the space that were like literally on record.
So he like literally went and pulled like from like the city
records.
He dug
for us. So like, he's an extraordinary guy who cares so deeply about his clients and about what he's doing. And I feel really fortunate to have gotten that experience with him. He's also designed multiple restaurants of different, very different genres and kinds. So I think having that experience with someone is really helpful. Because sometimes you can say, like, I want to put that in the restaurant. And he's like, yeah, that just doesn't, it's not going
to
work.
Right. I mean, I think this goes back to, like, making sure you're picking true experts, which mm-hmm. I think we've talked a lot
Absolutely.
About on the show, too. And then again, to what one of our key takeaways is, like, treating your vendors like partners, because obviously, like, you wouldn't have gotten all that experience.
It may be easier, you know, probably a little easier with the market of New York City, but I think in a smaller market, I think you really would have to vet and make sure that the architect or designer you're working with had a lot of restaurant experience to be able to sort of help you avoid some of those pitfalls of the space.
I've met with people who are amazing designers, architects, interiors, who don't have restaurant experience, and I'm always really tempted to like investigate that more closely on a, in a really positive way, because I think you get a whole different perspective of right. someone who hasn't done a ton of restaurants. And I think that could be really cool. But there is also a caution of like functionality yeah. and design.
Right. It's very, I mean, because restaurants don't only have to be beautiful, and not, they have to be super functional.
Yeah, not even just functionality in terms of flow, but like, is that floor material going to get super dirty with 300 people trekking through it all day? Or is that paint color going to get dirty when someone drags something across it? So I think yeah. like it's not, it's when you're not a designer and when you're a chef who happens to just really love pretty things like I do, I
Missy
think
has good taste.
Yeah. I mean, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Are there any functional, you know, design wins or losses that you feel like you had at Lilia or Missy that you would share?
Well, I think they're at Lilia. I think we missed the boat on some of the back of house things.
Yeah.
We don't have like the best locker room. We don't have an amazing prep kitchen. So that the kitchen, the one line that you see when you come to Lilia is the line, and it's a very busy restaurant, and there's no other place for people to prep. The pasta, where they make the pasta, is very small there, and while like on paper it looked like it was going to be really amazing when you put a 8-foot wood table in there, but also have your pastry section, your fish prep, your veg prep, like it's
all in one room.
This is the space behind the cafe,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and it's small, but I don't know. I mean, I also feel really fortunate. I grew up cooking in very small New York kitchens,
yeah,
and I am told every day how big my kitchens are. So like, I know that I'm really fortunate, but I think there's some like back of house wine storage is a problem at Lilia.
Why do you think those things happened? Was it just like there wasn't enough space left when it came time?
Yeah,
to find
I think
a spot
it's
for the
like
wine,
we had this design and like we wanted to maximize seats as much as possible without crowding it. And I think you just kind of, it got a little lost. And so I, when we went to design Missy, I think it was a real opportunity for me to say, okay, what's really missing at Lilia? And look, Missy is 1,500 square feet bigger, I think, almost 2,000 square feet bigger than Lilia. But and that
hence
obviously
why you have a bigger kitchen.
Well, that obviously makes for more seats, and it makes for a bigger kitchen, but there's like you still end up in that thing where there's like never enough room. So yeah.
Well,
like
you always want to have seats come trumps
everything,
right?
Seats, but though I didn't want like, look, in any restaurant you can probably always fit a few more, and Peter kept trying to like add seats, like okay, we're at 110, we're, and I was like, no, take it down, I want it under 100.
What's your seat count now?
98 plus the pasta room at night turns into private dining.
Right.
So, like it's a nice size, and that's like a size I'm comfortable with. But like the coat closet's still too small, the office is still too small, the wine storage is still too small. So like you think you're creating this like perfect space, and sometimes like what you I think as a obviously novice or non designer. It's really hard to look at things, for me at least. I don't know if everyone feels this way, but on two-dimensional piece of paper, it's really, really hard to look at a drawing and be like, yeah, that's the right office size. So like yeah. Peter could tell me 100 times that the office is 10x6, and I'd be like, oh, okay, cool. And on paper,
yeah, 60 square feet
and on
like,
paper,
yeah.
it looks right. And right. then when it went up, I was like,
oh. Why is this so small? And you're like, where's Sean?
No, forget about me and Sean. It's like a one-man. Yeah. Forget about they work in the restaurant. It's like a one-man show in yeah. there. Like they use it to do like very menial tasks, which in a way is also great because it keeps people out of the office and in the restaurant.
The floor. Yeah.
But like there are little things like that, and there's some things that you just can't fix. Like once it's done, it's done, and the walls are up and the framing's up and you can't change it.
Yeah.
But bottom line, you always find a way to make it work, right?
This well, that is also true. And yeah. I think you also have to just be like, okay, we did this. How do we make it work? And I think you just have to be creative sometimes, and you do generally make it work.
Yeah. On that note, let's take a super quick break to hear from our friends at Bento Box, and we'll come back with more with Missy.
Mm-hmm.
Marie, a longtime public school teacher, decided to change paths and turn her passion for baking into a career. She believed bread could have a big social impact and bring the community together, but she knew her bakery could be bigger than bread alone. In 2018, Café du Pain opened its doors, serving breads, pastries, and cakes, while launching initiatives like the Birthday Cake Project that help local youth who are impacted by homelessness and poverty. Marie is an influential and generous figure in the Lawrenceville, New Jersey community. Bento Box helped Café du Pain build an online image and beautiful new website that attracts new guests and sells tickets for their junior baker's classes and teaches kids valuable life skills. Café du Pain is one of 4,000 that's powered by Bento. Visit getbento.com/opening soon to learn more.
All right, and welcome back. We're chatting with Missy Robbins of Missia and Lilia Restaurants in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. And we'll do just a couple of key points from the first half that I thought were interesting. One, that the character of Lilia in particular, you know, outweighed sort of any of the difficulty long-term with the building of a raw space like that. Number two is if you have the opportunity, if you've already met the person or to be able to bring your architect or your designer with you when you're visiting, you know, your final spaces. Obviously, don't trek them along for 40 real estate visits because they probably will leave you pretty quickly.
All the designers out there are like, what the hell?
I'm not doing that. But in the long run, it will make their life easier. It'll make, you know, it'll make your restaurant more successful.
I do think they're pretty willing to do it, actually. I've brought designers to spaces that I was potentially going to work with, not even people that I knew very well, because I wanted to see what they thought and how their brains worked on site.
Yeah.
And they were more than happy to do it.
Yeah. It's a good point, because then it's also an interview process for
a little bit. It's part of the interview process for sure.
And then the third one was that no matter how well you design the space or what you forget to put in, that there's always a way to make it work. And you know, it's a restaurant. You'll find your way through and find a place to put your wine.
One thing I'm curious about is that we haven't really gotten into, but I know it's like always, you know, budget's always an issue, right? So like, are there times with building either Lilia or Missy where you're like, we have to sacrifice here, and how did you make those?
Every day. Yeah, I think there are always times where you have to. I don't know that I've ever heard of anyone's project that isn't over budget. That doesn't need to be cutting here and there. And I think the most important thing is when you do have to make cuts, to make them in a way that's not sacrificing your vision and not sacrificing your aesthetic, and things that, like, you're the only person, you and your designer are like maybe the only two people who might notice. So we cut some things, we change some things. So like sometimes it might just be as simple as picking a very similar light fixture that's a couple $100 cheaper, but like has the very, very same look.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's as big as like a wall was supposed to be done in wood and you decide to just paint it instead. And those, like, in the moment, the decisions are tough, but I think you have to work with your designer to make those decisions together, because they're going to know what's really going to affect a space and what's not. And so like, you can say, like, I need to cut X, Y, and Z. And they can be like, well, you don't really need to do that. I would cut this instead, because it's not. And it's also sometimes a matter of changing materials.
Yeah.
There were sometimes that's for functionality. And sometimes you say, oh, we're going to do this in steel and it's going to look great. And then sometimes you get in there and for functionality purposes, you decide that it's not the right material. And sometimes it takes like a moment for you to recalibrate your brain to like deal with another material, and then you get over it, and then you have this restaurant and you're fine.
Right. I know. It's like in the moment you feel like it's the biggest deal, but in the end,
100%.
In the same vein of budget, how do you feel about, I know there's some lore that Sean built some of the bathrooms in your first restaurant. Listen, how do you feel about the DIY process?
I think there might be lore that Sean built all of Missy. I'm not sure.
We love you, Sean.
Hi, Sean.
How do you feel about the DIY process?
I'm not a DIYer. Okay. Like, that's just not my thing.
Right.
I have vision and I have aesthetic and like I know what I like, and I think, as the two of you know, I'm extremely opinionated.
Yeah.
You're better explaining it than like hammering.
It's just not my thing. But I told you about a very good. May I give a call out?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, please.
My friend Julia Jaksik, one of my best friends in the world, who's a chef, and she was here in New York for many, many years as the chef and partner at Employees Only, moved to Nashville. An open Cafe Rose about two years ago, like this week, I think, actually. And she is the ultimate. She's a chef. She's extremely creative as a chef. She's designed her whole restaurant herself. She picked a contractor. She made the plans with the contractor. She bought every piece of material. Wow. She was in there, like, doing cool things on walls. And she was on a really tight budget, and it worked for her. Like, that's who she is, and she's really good at it. And I think if you can do that and you can open a restaurant and do it on a budget and be really comfortable and know that you're good at it, it's not what I'm good at.
It's right. Yeah, goes back to knowing your strengths. Focus, so it's like that strengths. Is yeah, focus on your strengths. So that sounds like, you know,
yeah.
To go see Julie at Cafe Rose.
Yeah, please go see Julie at Cafe Rose.
But yeah. Should we go through some
lightning round
stuff? Oh, I love sure. A lightning round, guys.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, no.
You don't know
like who likes a lightning round?
Well, the ones that we sent you are not these. We
I'm
changed
sure.
It completely.
I have no doubt. Do you think I read the
totally
ones you
impressed.
Sent me?
Yeah.
Thanks, Missy.
I did.
Missy prepped for our interview, guys.
I
thanks,
did.
Missy. So, yes, yeah, so
you
can
start
be,
it.
These can be quick 1 to 2 word answers, or you can elaborate, yes. Up to you. One word that describes how you feel about being your own boss.
Elated.
Elated. Yeah. Next one is number of days off in the first year of business at Lilia.
I actually took days off. I didn't take a day off until we got reviewed, and then I started taking Sundays, and then gradually started.
How long did it take
to get reviewed?
Oh,
like
3 weeks?
I don't know, 6 weeks, something, six
that's
weeks,
crazy.
10 weeks, something. And we opened January 19th, and we got reviewed March something or other. It was very quick.
Yeah.
I believe in taking days off. I mean, I think. For anyone who's listened to me over the past couple of years, I took some time off and, you know, learned about balance. So I believe in days off.
And you instill that in your employees, too.
I sure try. I really try.
Which is great.
This is less pertinent, but number of days off last week, I'm guessing it was 2.
I
you were on vacation.
I got
like
back
all
last
week.
Missy has a post-it glow about her.
I'm keeping it alive.
Basking in the Italian sun.
Yes. Here in Bushwick.
Okay, so you are a world-renowned traveling speaker on the power of restaurant design. Give us your one-line motivational quote.
Stick to your vision.
Ooh, that's
good
a good one, Missy.
Thank you, Jenny.
Yeah, stick to your vision.
Dream location for restaurant number 3.
This week, the Alps in Italy.
Again, the Alps?
Yeah.
The Alps.
Chile.
Not this time of year. It's not chilly.
Okay.
Beautiful.
All right. We will go visit.
Yeah, I'll definitely come visit you in the Alps.
It could change next week. It could be Milan. Let's just say Italy.
Okay. All right, Italy.
Yeah.
So you're going to be an American chef cooking Italian food in Italy.
That's my dream. You asked what the dream was.
Yeah,
that's,
I like it.
That's right. The dream.
I'm just reiterating.
No pressure about
I don't.
Being the American chef cooking Italian food.
I don't.
Food.
I seriously would love to do it. Like, honestly, there's nothing that would make me happier.
Cool.
What's your favorite thing about designing a restaurant?
I think there's so much that goes into the process, and there's just, it's not just about like the kitchen or the dining room, but it's like picking everything. And we talked about this a little bit when we were talking about the interview is the design of everything. So plates, glassware, graphics, the whole kind of brand and what that means. And you can have this like beautiful space and then really screw it up if everything else kind of doesn't go with it. And I remember doing the branding for Lilia, and it didn't like feel right at certain points once I saw the space come together. So it's often like good not to necessarily 100% do your branding before you really understand what this space is.
Did you change things about your branding afterwards?
No, but I got like nervous that the branding wasn't right. I'm in love with both of our brands, and I think it's great. And I work really hard on the, I work equally as hard on the branding with our graphics person as I do on the design. But I, there was like a certain point where I saw things coming together and I was like, is this right? And I think you always kind of question it.
How do you do that? How do you, obviously you don't go one day and buy everything from plates to tiles on the floor to wall finishing. It's like, how do you do that without, you know, and keep it all, you know, very aligned?
I think you do the building design and the space design first.
Right.
And then, because obviously it takes more time and it takes time to build it. And while you're in the building process and as you've already picked out all of those materials, your bar materials, your back bar, your thing, you can have a kind of bigger vision of what the space. And I'm not saying that like dishes need to match the space. But like there has to be some flow, I think.
But yeah, I agree.
I'll tell you what, do I have time for a little?
Run.
So I had this vision for Missy that to contrast the very super kind of clean modern design, that I wanted to use all vintage like cordial glasses for Amaro and Grappa.
Oh, really?
And I had my mother, sorry, Mom, running all over the place to these like consignment stores and Talia, my girlfriend, like picking up stuff in Paris and all these glasses. I now have 200 plus cordial glasses.
Where, sitting at in your
my
house?
They're sitting in my apartment because when I brought them to the restaurant and I like kind of put them on the shelves a few weeks before we opened, I'm like, this looks really silly in here. So that's like funny. Again, so you can funny. Have this like yeah. like I'm constantly trying to get myself out of this modern like Scandinavian kind of look, and I constantly am trying to do it and it doesn't work. I use the glasses at home, which is awesome.
So Amaro party at Missy's house for 200 people.
No, I'm not kidding, like my poor mom. And the glasses are beautiful. Like I'm now psyched I have them, and I'm sure I will open something someday where we can use them.
eBay.
Missy's eBay page. They'll give you the listing.
When I move to Italy, they'll be coming.
They'll be coming to the Alps with Missy. Yeah.
In the same vein about your favorite thing about designing, is there one like special component of Missy that you're really proud of? I know that like the tiles with the lines on them was something you talked about in building. Is there anything like that?
In general, the pasta room.
That's
like something I've wanted for so long, and just sort of inspired by my time that I did spend cooking in Italy 20 years ago, of like these dedicated kind of rooms that I didn't see a lot of them, but I worked in a few places, even if it was like a basement and it was just like someone making pasta. Right. I wanted a place that was really dedicated to that. When Sean and I saw the space that Missy now occupies for the first time, it was like so clear to both of us that where the pasta room lies now is where the pasta room was going to be. I mean, that was like the first thing we decided when we walked into space.
So Sean was on board that you should have a pasta room the whole time, too.
Sean
was definitely on board with it. Yeah, he loved it. Yeah.
If you haven't been there, the pasta room is not just a room in the basement. It's a beautiful room that's very functional.
For every chef who's done time in the basement.
But it's also an entire wall of glass that before you come into the restaurant, you can see people in there, you know, hand-making tortellis and doing everything.
It's cool. And besides that, like it gives our staff an amazing room to work in and where they can really like spread out and get it done. They're making, now that we're open for lunch, I mean, we're probably selling close to 500 pastas a day plus.
500 portions of pasta a day.
Close, probably.
And everything you obviously make in-house.
Yeah, so. Every single pasta made in-house.
How many hours a day is spent making pasta a day?
Three to five people a day, depending on the day, and eight hours each.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot of hours spent in that room, so well worth it.
We talked about this a little bit, and I think I know your answer, but what's your least favorite thing about Missy's design?
My My least favorite thing about Missy's design is the bathroom sinks.
Oh, really?
Oh, the bathroom sinks.
I thought it was the plugs in the wall.
The bathroom
sinks. Was that?
No, that was just me being annoyed by having to, no, the bathroom sinks.
What's wrong with the bathroom sinks?
Not functional. They're just
it's like the handles
spray,
are a little...
The handles are weird. The water sprays all over the place. I'm constantly, like, every time I go in the bathroom,
like,
just
wet.
wiping up water.
I love it.
Yeah, I would say
there's
that.
Not a lot of misses. But
yeah. There's not a lot of misses. Yeah. But this also goes back to, even if you're a business owner, you're still cleaning up after something.
Point. Still Good cleaning point. The bathroom.
Still Good cleaning point. The bathroom.
I take it. I do it, though, because it's, like, my own fault that I put those sinks in, you know? I take full responsibility.
What's your favorite thing on the Lilia or Missy menu?
Whoa. Jenny, you're about to have your second child.
Yeah.
I think they tell you not to pick favorite kids.
Oh, you don't have to pick like...
I'm going
to
pick right now my favorite.
Yeah, that's right now.
Right now, my favorite at Lilia, which is probably going to go away in the next like 3 days.
So get off.
Is Ramp Tortelli.
Those are
with
so good.
Prosciutto and mint. That's one of my favorites. And at Missy... My favorite right this second is probably the porcini that I'm going to run as a special tonight.
Ooh.
So if you're a lucky diner at Missy tonight, you heard it here first.
I'll take
My
that
favorite
as
thing
our
is
invite.
Your ramp focaccia at Lilia.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Also going away. Ramps are like pretty... I'm like begging. I'm begging for them. They're pretty much non-existent right at the moment.
What's the most ordered thing on the menu at Lilia and Missy?
Lilia, the agnolotti. Missy, the tortelli, I believe.
Really? Over the peppers and ricotta?
They may be.
I love the peppers and ricotta.
They may be pretty close.
Okay.
I'll show you my stats later.
Just curious. I feel like I see it on every table. It's on everybody's Instagram page.
Yes, it's probably peppers.
Definitely the most shared item on
the
menu.
It's probably...
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That should be another question. What's the most Instagrammed item on the menu? We're adding in a third.
I don't think we're going to go there. We'll save that for another.
Yeah, that's a whole other podcast.
All right, last one. You're an inspiration to many people in the industry. Who inspires you?
I mean, so many people, but I think the people that have inspired me the most are the people in my life, like Tony Montuano and Jonathan Waxman, who I've watched just have crazy longevity in this business. Nancy Silverton, she ate at Lilia last night. Those people, like, are the I hope that my career can have the same longevity as theirs and just the same kind of success that all three of those people have had.
Cool. Yeah, you told us a story about about Jonathan Waxman kind of sharing with you some of the realities of the size of your restaurant. I thought that was really interesting and neat because I think everyone, you know, is looking for a mentor in their business and how important that was to you.
Yeah, I was unemployed and wanted to open a little 40-seat West Village restaurant, and I don't know even how Jonathan knew that, but he called me into He called me into Barbudo one day and said he wanted to talk to me and pulled me down into his office and started showing me a lot of P&Ls and just kind of showing me like what it takes to do that and at what point I was in my career and did I really want to not have a chef de cuisine and did I have the funds to be able to just, you know, not be a working chef or be a working chef and how hard it is to do that. So I still someday would like my little tiny restaurant.
In Italy.
But in Italy. but yeah, I think that mentorship is really important. And at this point in my career, I really try and spend a lot of time mentoring other people. And that's actually what excites me the most right now is sort of that and being able to kind of help people flourish in their careers.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a good point is, you know, don't be afraid to ask other people for advice and for help. And it's one of the reasons why we're having this show is because I feel like, you know, people are scared to ask for help and there's not like an easy resource for knowledge. So
we'll give
direct message, Missy, we'll give you your cell phone.
Yeah, no, it's hard. It's really hard. It's scary to open your own place and it's you know, I think for me, I had been in the business for so long, but I didn't know how to design a space and I didn't know how to hire an architect and I didn't know how to like deal with a lot of things. And so I think mentorship is an important part of it.
So important. Thank you for mentoring people in the industry.
Cool. Well, next week, tune in as we chat team building and culture with Chef Steven Satterfield of Miller Union in Atlanta and John Seiber of Tail Up Goat in Washington, D.C., our first out of New York chefs coming in to chat. Special thanks again to Missy Robbins for being here. If your dog ate your notebook and you didn't take notes today, we've got your back. You can check our blog on tillitnyc.com to catch our wrap-up of key points from today. Missy, tell everybody where to find you.
I am in Williamsburg. Lilia is in North 10th and Union, and Missy is at 325 Kent at Kent and South 4th in Williamsburg.
And they can follow you on Instagram where?
At Missy A. Robbins, at Missy New York, at Lilia New York.
Cool. And for us, follow The Journey on Heritage Radio and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or anywhere else you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at We Are Opening Soon and at Till It NYC. If you like what we're doing, tell everyone you know. Follow our podcast, give us a rating and a review. 5 stars, please. And just like Uber. That's it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Thank you, Missy.
Thank you guys for having me. Super fun.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.